Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about actually doing science. We've mentioned over and over and over that we're retired physicists, and now it's our chance to talk about, you know, how scientists can do some of their work with a visual impairment, but at pretty much every level. So our low-tech item will be about accessible science books for the general public. Our focus item will be bringing back Rebecca, our high school student that we had talked to earlier about her experiences doing research and participating in a high-level science fair. And the high-tech item will be about accessible professional tools for doing advanced mathematics on the computer with a visual impairment. But first, to our tip of the week. Our tip of the week is that with the help of converters and viewers that are available free from Office Online, you can share your Microsoft Office files with people who have different versions of Office programs, or even with people who don't have Office at all.
The latest version of Office is Office 2010, and a lot of people haven't updated to that. And so sometimes what happens is, as you know, that someone will send you a Word document or a PowerPoint document, and all of a sudden you can't read it. And your computer says, sorry, I don't know how to open this up. So what do? You don't want to go out and buy Office 2010. That's a big
expense.
Because that's
expensive.
That's right. So these converters and viewers are for doing exactly that job. The difference between these things is the converters, what they'll do is actually take if your version of Office and convert it to some earlier version so you can send it to somebody with an earlier version of Office and they'll be able to read it without any problem. The viewers, on the other hand, are for the people with the earlier versions, and they get a version later than they have from someone else that wouldn't normally open, and the viewer allows them to just view the document that they receive from someone else.
So if you want to get hold of either the viewers or the converters, and possibly both, you can go to Microsoft's website, www.office.microsoft.com, and then search for either viewer or converter. And how would you do that using a screen reader, Pete?
So that's the tricky part with these things. You know, sometimes we don't tell people how to actually find these things easily on a complex web page. So the way I did this in JAWS was, if you type an E once the web page comes up, this will put you in the edit form field, which is usually the search field, and JAWS will announce what the field is, whether it's a search field or an address field or something. Make sure you're in forms mode in JAWS by hitting enter, and then you can type viewer or converter as Nancy suggested. Hit enter again, and the search terms will come up. And then to easily get to the search pages, just do a JAWS search, which is done by using Control F. Enter the term you're looking for, so you're looking for viewer or converter, and that'll find the first instance of that word in the search terms. So this will obviate the need for arrowing down long lists of words and column titles and things like that and save you a little bit of time. And then you can find the download button, again, usually by doing Control F and looking for the word down or download to get you to a download link or button. And then you can download the program and install it in the usual fashion.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about science books for the general public that are available in accessible format. And there are a number of places that you can get hold of these books. So let's start with Bookshare, one of Pete's favorite sources. And if you want to get books from Bookshare, you can start at their website, www.bookshare, all one word, .org.
Now, this is one of my favorite places for getting books, particularly books that are more recent, because they don't have to find readers to read the books, and as soon as an electronic copy is available, it'll generally appear on Bookshare. So it's very easy to get current material there. In last week's episode of Viewpoints, Nancy mentioned that the Audiophile magazine had a review of Brian Greene's latest book,
The Hidden Reality, Parallel Universes, and the Deep Laws of the Cosmos, because we really know how to have a good time. We find this stuff interesting.
Often when I look for books, I look for the audio version first because that's more pleasing. So I looked on the NLS site and they didn't have it. I looked in Learning Ally, formerly Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, and they didn't have it either. So I finally went to Bookshare, and of course, they had the book.
So Pete just mentioned a couple of other sources that he often uses for downloading books, and he's gotten any number of these general public level science books from both the NLS, which their website is nlsbard.loc.gov, and Learning Ally. Their new web address is learningally, all one word, .org.
Trying to find some of these books with a screen reader, instead of going to the exact Bookshare site and logging into Bookshare, turns out that some of the new JAWS versions, I think starting with version 11 of JAWS, has a new feature called Research It, where you hit the JAWS key and the space bar at the same time, and then the R key to get into Research It, and you can type in the name of a book and do an automatic search on Bookshare. This is sort of like a little gadget or widget that they have in the Windows operating system that sighted folks use. But this is a way of quickly getting a search done on Bookshare without actually having to go through the internet and stuff.
This week's focus topic is about participating in a science fair with a visual impairment. We introduced Rebecca from Long Island in show 1112. And at the time, we were talking about education and getting through school with a visual impairment because Rebecca has a visual impairment and she's a current student. She's actually in 11th grade. How we got hooked up with her was that one of her teachers figured out that she could use a little advice from some experienced researchers because she's doing a research project on her own at the school. And, oh, by the way, she's visually impaired. Pete's visually impaired. He graduated from her high school. And wouldn't that be a nice coincidence? And we've been spending an awful lot of time talking to Rebecca and enjoying every minute of it about her research project. We've basically been coaching her on presentation skills because, as you'll understand from the title of her project, we barely understand the content.
It was a very specific project she did in biological sciences, which isn't quite our forte.
Right. We're both physicists, but we figured, hey, high school biology, how hard can it be? Well, the title of her project is A Novel Approach to Modeling Genetic Sensory Impairments Through De Novo Prediction of Mutant Protein Structure. And with that project, she just won second prize in her category at the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair, which is an enormous, enormous achievement for anybody.
That's a big thing in the science world and very well known. We finally got to meet Rebecca in person after doing all this interaction with her on Skype and telephone calls over the past several months.
And we just talked to her the other day about coming home from ISEF. So you have to appreciate there's 1,500 students or so from all over the world with about 900 projects competing. And winning second prize in her category was awesome. Now, even Intel makes a really big deal out of this competition, which, by the way, was in Los Angeles. She got sent there, all expenses paid, along with a chaperone from the school, all expenses paid. And they continued treating the kids really well after they got there.
Okay, the keynote speaker is Jeffrey Katzenberg, who's like the CEO of DreamWorks.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty cool. That is cool.
It was really cool, really unique. It's like a show, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole week is huge. Like, ISEF pretty much took over downtown Los Angeles. Wednesday after judging, after that long day, Universal was only open to ISEF people.
Oh, wow. How cool.
Like, they had, like, the red carpet, and we had, like, VIP badges. It was pretty cool. There's, like, a separate special award associated with first and second place, where you get, like, a minor planet named after you.
That's okay. So where is yours?
I don't know. They said it takes a while, but it's kind of cool.
When we find out where the Rebecca planet winds up being, maybe we'll let everybody know, and you can look for it in the sky at night.
But it wasn't all fun. She was there for a week. She spent pretty much all day Monday setting up her project. all day Wednesday being judged. There were so many awards. They had two different awards ceremonies. And here's how she spent Tuesday.
Between Monday night and all day Tuesday, I practiced between 8 and 9 times.
So she was pretty busy Tuesday, even though it was nominally a day off. And we asked her how her visual impairment impacted her experience there.
Well, I mean, the judges, it's hard for the judges to realize, because if you don't have your cane out and, like, you're pretty good at, like, making eye contact and stuff, it's not really a big deal. The only thing that, like, I found troubling was that a lot of my materials were in regular print. I couldn't point out things that were unexpected, but I needed in my own materials. Like I said, you know, just bear with me for a sec. You know, I can't read this, you know, this font size. But if I had a large font size, like, that would make it, the project stand out. And I don't want them to look at, like, I don't want to continually make it obvious that I have a visual impairment. Like, I want them to consider my project. And, you know, you definitely say something, because when you're being judged, I mean, it's a little weird if they don't realize that maybe you can't see as much. And that's also how I started my project. Mm-hmm. But that was the largest impact. And I learned a lot at ISEF. I learned that, you know, different ways to make a board, different, you know, maybe things that would have made the presentation a little bit easier for me. But one of the things that you learn is that judges are human and they know that you're human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have to be perfect. So if, like, for that 1 second that I maybe had trouble finding something in my logbook that I wanted to show, mm-hmm. like, they realize that you're human. And especially the fact that you've gotten there already, that's a big, like, they know you're capable and they can wait. They're not super impatient people. They're real people. And, like, I try to tell, like, the younger kids that, like, if you make a little mistake, like, you're human. You're not perfect. Nobody's perfect.
And I think that's a great comment. And I found that to be true, you know, most of my life. People in general want to be helpful. Often they may not know how to be helpful, so you may have to guide them a little bit. But even little things like crossing a street or something, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to ask people. You may be a little bit shy and think that, you know, you don't want to ask people for the help. But generally, people are very eager to do that. They feel good about it. You wind up better off for it. So just realize people like to be friendly if you let them know how.
You know, you might think, oh, geez, Rebecca only came in second at this, you know, huge international fair. Well, turns out that the deck was stacked a little bit against the 11th graders, but, you know, she's got a really good perspective on how this all works and winning and prizes and who gets what.
They also take into account the fact that you're a junior or a senior, because the only people who got first place were seniors.
Is that right?
Oh, really?
And that's,
they give priority to the seniors, you think?
Okay, here's the reason. They don't want the seniors coming back and winning those huge grand awards twice. Because if the same people kept coming back with the same continued projects, then no one would ever win those awards.
Yeah, clearly, yeah. If it was a winner the first year, it ought to be a winner the
exactly.
second year, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Interesting point. Huh.
So, I mean, if you go to ISEF multiple times, like, that's fine. But those top projects, like, I was fine with it. Like, I think that... I agree. I think that if a junior, like a junior or sophomore, shouldn't be coming back multiple times and winning something
yes.
like that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, but you want to come back next year and do better than you did this year.
Absolutely. And then there is room for improvement. Like, that's really cool. Like, my friend Erica last year, like, she did really well and she topped herself this year.
Really?
Like, she got one of those huge grand awards. Like, she's going to Finland. I mean.
Oh, that's so cool. Shady.
Yeah.
So I guess we're going to have to track Rebecca next year and see what happens if she gets into the International Science and Engineering Fair again.
I think she probably will. She's pretty determined.
And you'll hear about it on Viewpoints.
That's right, but you have to wait a year. So here are some comments from how the week ended.
Everyone from our New York State group got something except one girl, which is kind of unfortunate.
Well, you guys must have had a lot of fun on the plane on the way home.
I actually slept, but I slept for like an hour and a half, but we definitely did.
I'll bet all that adrenaline kicking around all week.
Everyone was like really excited for California, but now I'm kind of like, pretty much as soon as I got back, I started working on stuff for next year.
So I guess she is set for next year.
Right. She's got lots of great ideas of what to do next on her project. And You know, this little clip kind of summarizes her attitude towards the whole thing.
It was cool, especially on public day, to show people that if you really, like, set your mind to something, it's possible.
With or without a visual impairment.
And her story and traveling through this science fair was very much a tribute to that.
Just to put this a little bit further into perspective, most of the students who get into this International Science and Engineering Fair have been doing their work with university faculty advisors. She did her project all on her own. And by the way, the rest of them could probably see as well. You know, we gave her some help on her written and verbal presentation skills, but the research was all hers. And she actually went out and contacted one of the professors whose original technical paper she had been referencing. And this summer, she'll be working in that professor's lab at New York University on her project. This is almost unheard of for a research professor to invite a high school student, never mind even an undergraduate, to work in his lab on the student's project. If you're lucky, you get to wash the professor's dishes on his project. So we'll be following Rebecca through the summer, see how that works out, you know, being a high school student in a lab full of graduate students and higher level people. So this isn't our only experience with science fairs. It turns out coincidentally that we've been judges at a number of science fairs, both at our kids' local elementary school and also at the regional middle school and high school level science fair, which is held every year at St. John Fisher College for basically the entire Finger Lakes region. And this region has also sent some really fabulous projects on to the Intel ICEF. But it's been an interesting experience for some of the students to have a blind judge, and they're not used to dealing with blind people at all.
They go through a lot of trouble to make their poster boards very flashy and informative, and you know, they expect people can just read that to get a lot of the content. But when I come around, of course, they have to be a little bit more explicit, and so it, you know, it forces them to be more thoughtful and you know, describe their project in a little bit of a different fashion.
Now, sometimes with the elementary students, we just judged fifth grade, so these kids were 10 or 11 years old. I had to kind of help describe some of the visuals, because even with Pete standing there with his cane and repeating over and over, "I can't see what you're showing me," they would still say, "As you can see over here."
They don't often get that, do they? Actually, the hardest part with some of the younger kids is they don't learn to project at that age. And so they're kind of whispering like this, and you can't really hear what they're saying. And, you know, you tell them to speak up, and that only makes them more self-conscious and quieter sometimes.
Yeah, but it doesn't quiet down the kids at the adjacent tables. So we actually, the last time we did it, had to go to the kids at both adjacent tables and say, "Could you please be quiet? We can't hear this girl." And then by, you know, crouching down, getting our ears next to her mouth, which, of course, made her even quieter, and getting the other kids to be quiet, we barely managed to hear what she had to say.
But we enjoy seeing the creativity of these kids and the enthusiasm that they come to these science fairs with. And, you know, it's great to know that they participate in these things. And we have a lot of fun also.
And someday one of these kids who's growing mold on the kitchen counter, as our daughter once did, or erupting a volcano all over the kid next door's project, one of these days, one of these kids might grow up to be doing, you know, really original research like Rebecca is on a high school level and actually going somewhere. And as long as they're having fun with science, that'll keep them involved. So that's a good thing. Now for this week's high-tech item, using some professional tools that are actually accessible. So when you were in high school and college and you got your homework assignments and there were all of these pages of arithmetic and calculus and whatnot that you had to do, you pretty much did that with a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper. As your vision failed, that wasn't going to work so well.
Right. When I was younger, I used to be able to see well enough to be able to hold my nose close to a piece of paper or a book and be able to do my work that way. I mean, sometimes my eyes would get tired, so I'd have to figure out what was the right time to do all that stuff. When I got to graduate school, I had an operation which left me blind just before I went to graduate school, so I had to relearn how to do some of these things. And although I knew Braille as a youngster, I hadn't used it for most of my high school and junior high school career. And so I figured, well, I ought to learn Braille math if I'm going to become a physicist. And I actually went to a summer program called the Industrial Home for the Blind on Long Island for about 6 weeks to learn cane lessons and how to get around as a, you know, newly, totally blind person. And I asked, okay, so I need to learn Braille math. I'm going to go into graduate school in physics. And they didn't have anyone who could teach that. And Braille is becoming somewhat of a lost art. And so essentially what they did was collect a pile of manuals and just dumped them on a desk and said, well, here, read these. And so I spent a good deal of the summer just reading through those books, taking notes on them, and just hoping it would work out when I got to graduate school. As a professional physicist, I couldn't see printed material very well. I used a variety of software packages to help me with math. In the early days, there was a program called Maxima from MIT, and this used to do symbolic math. So if you put in something like x plus x, it would say 2x. So you didn't actually have to put in numbers and things. At the time, these programs ran on big mainframe computers, so I didn't have this running on my computer in my office. In fact, we didn't have personal computers. I had a computer terminal, and I had an account at MIT where I would use this tool. This was the way I got through doing some early math where, you know, there were maybe hundreds of pages of algebra literally to get through. Since then, you can get programs like this running on your computer and just download them.
The one you said is a direct descendant of this one at MIT is called Maxima, M-A-X-I-M-A. That one's available for free at www.maxima.sourceforge.net. So that's www.maxima.sourceforge.net.
So if you want a reasonably sophisticated math program that'll do symbolic math as well as numerical math, that's one you can get. But the commercial developers have improved these tools a lot more and the interfaces, added some more facilities. So if you're willing to spend some money, typically between $1,000 and $2,000, you can get a program like Maple, M-A-P-L-E.
And that's available at www.maplesoft.com, M-A-P-L-E-S-O-F-T.
And this is the program I used for many years at Xerox when I was doing a lot of my math. This'll not only do algebraic equations, solve them, it'll do differential equations, it will do calculus, perform differentiation, integration, if you're familiar with that is, and solve all kinds of complicated equations for you.
You probably don't want to use that if you're in high school or college taking freshman calculus because you still have to learn the principles. But once you learn the principles, it's great to apply this to real research problems.
Right. Now, Maple was the program that I used, but the one that's more familiar to many physicists and mathematicians is called Mathematica, M-A-T-H-E-M-A-T-I-C-A.
And that's available at Wolfram.com. That's the company that developed it. So that's www.wolfram.com, Wolfram.
Now, I found the interface of that one to be a little bit more problematical with JAWS at the time. Although what I've since learned in using these programs is, although they tend to be highly graphical in nature, and they'll print out mathematical formulas just the way you'd see them in print, they usually have a mode where you can print out the mathematical formula in a line, in a single line, so you can easily read it on a Braille display. So instead of having x squared be x with a 2 that's higher up than the x, it'll say x caret 2 all on one line. So that makes it easier to read in Braille. So when you're using one of these programs, use the linear output mode of these programs to make things a little bit easier.
And then another common program that's used a lot in image processing, electrical engineering, all sorts of other fields is MATLAB, available from MathWorks at www.mathworks.com.
Right. Now, that one tends to be more for numerical math and quickly prototyping different kinds of programs and algorithms and stuff, but they do have some symbolic math capabilities also. I also used that one when I worked at Xerox as a physicist. Any of these programs, try to put them in some kind of command line mode rather than a graphics mode, and they'll work a lot better with a screen reader or a braille display.
And then there's one you said is specifically available for the PacMate?
Well, yeah, that's interesting. You know, people have these little calculators, these HP calculators you can go buy at Staples that'll do symbolic math and all kinds of stuff for like $100 or so. What I found a few years ago was someone actually ported some of this software over to little PDA devices, and working with a developer, I got this to run on the PacMate and develop some JAWS scripts and documentation for it, so you can actually do symbolic math on the PacMate from Freedom Scientific.
And apparently you can get hold of some of that by going to PacMateGear.com. That would be www.PacMateGear.com.
Right, and search for these scripts. There are also lots of other utilities for the PacMate on that website.
That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be a little bit less scientific intensive. We'll be talking about sightseeing without being able to see the sights. And we will have lots of fun audio clips. We did an earlier show about our recent trip out west. Well, here's some more fun that we had out west. And just basically talking about different ways of enjoying your vacation experiences, as well as talking a little bit about how we made all of those recordings. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258. And we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.